T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Good Thursday, Rashini Rajkumar here. I am in for the vacationing Chad Hartman. It's good to be with you today. We have a lot of things to talk about. Dan has already put out on our Twitter page and on Facebook our big question of the show today, and we'll touch on it throughout the show. And that is, what is on your bucket list? This is this concept you've heard about. They've made movies about it. It's a very real thing. And I want to hear from you. Call us, tweet, Facebook message, or text us on the studio text line. And right out of the gate, Margie wants to talk about this. She's calling in from St. Louis Park. Hi there, Margie.
Hi. Yeah, so I'm really excited. My whole life, I've been lucky enough to lose a lot of weight and join a 12-step recovery program to do it. And my bucket list has to do with wanting to get in high schools and start supportive communities for the people who are overweight and the people who have eating disorders, so they can be there for each other while they work on managing their problem. And it's a really cool bucket list item that it's been put in my heart to do for quite a while, since I feel so grateful for what I've been given.
Margie, how are you going forward and emptying your bucket list of this item?
Well, my first thing is I got to figure out who to contact in the school systems. Now, I've already contacted the 12-step recovery program higher up, the inner group. And they're like, yeah, we would love to see something like that. So I've got a few volunteers already signed up who want to do it. I just have to get a hold of the schools and make a proposal so they'll let us in.
Yeah, and I would keep it simple, Margie. I would call the superintendent, maybe, of the school district in which you live, St. Louis Park. St. Louis Park is a very open city. They love to hear from their residents. So that's my recommendation. Quick tip right here on WCCO Radio. We want to help you. And thank you for sharing that bucket list item. That is very valiant. And you'll bring in, hopefully, some wonderful people and start some great conversation. So just like Margie, we want to hear from you. Give us a call today during the show. What's on your bucket list? Or you can tweet us, Facebook message us. And speaking of high schools, a big topic today, news breaking overnight, that the Minnesota Supreme Court has given a big point to coaches, coming down on the side of coaches, saying you can sue if a parent defames you. You are not a public figure just because you're a basketball coach or a soccer coach. Now, teachers, if you're just a teacher and not also a coach, your work as a teacher, that was not decided by the latest case, but it's a big victory that was handed down to coaches and, for that matter, schools and school districts by the Minnesota Supreme Court. I want to hear from you about this. I have my own opinions, but what do you think? Are you a parent out there who is so supportive of your kids' sport, the team, and other players, that when you see something happening with the coach, you want to speak out about it? Do you feel this is limiting you? I want to hear from you, 651 or 866-989-9226. But here's the thing on this. The Minnesota Supreme Court looked at this case that was brought. It went from the lower courts to the Court of Appeals, which all sided on the side of a parent who, it was a defamation case against this parent by the coach, who he said he was defamed. He's no longer coaching. And ultimately, the Minnesota Supreme Court, by making this ruling, turned out to side with the coach and reversed the courts below it. It really hinges on this concept of whether you're a private person or a public official. Because if you are truly a public figure, you can't really protect when someone decides to say something bad. Now, if they're reckless and if it is patently false, you have more of a case. But several of us here at the radio station as radio hosts could be deemed public figures. I hope people aren't going around defaming me, but I have less of a case to bring a defamation lawsuit than this particular coach did, and ultimately had to get to the Supreme Court of Minnesota to decide in his favor. But that's what it really hinged on. And, you know, here's the thing. This opens up for me, Dan, the topic of overly zealous parents. Because at least in some of the facts of this case, it sounds like this particular parent was saying things even outside of the coaching environment about this particular coach. And I think that's probably part of what the Supreme Court looked at. And you can't just go around making things up.
You can't. I mean, I think one of the allegations said that the parent indicated that the coach had stolen money from the program and was making some serious allegations and serious responses. Like you said, it sort of hinges on the fact that, yes, that the basketball coach, while he's an employee of a government institution, the function of a basketball coach isn't a core function of government, ergo he's not a public official in terms of defamations and lawsuits of that
right
nature.
His duties coaching basketball
right.
doesn't rise to that level of
one thing to say something
on behalf of the school
right.
or a big issue that the Constitution protects.
It's one thing to say something about the mayor or a member of the city council. They're saying that the basketball coach is on a different level than that. And they're not saying that this guy necessarily is right in terms of his allegations against these parents. They're simply saying that he can move forward with the lawsuit, which was what the rulings previously said. No, you're a public official. You can't move forward with this lawsuit, regardless of the merits of the case. So this isn't necessarily speaking to the merits of the case. It's speaking to the fact that he's not a public official under defamation law.
Yes, they can be sued. And here's my favorite line, according to the ruling. The ruling said simply, basketball is not fundamental to democracy. Now, there might be people out there, including members of the Lynx and the Timberwolves, who would argue against that line. But that is so true. Basketball, or any sport for that matter, not fundamental to democracy. And that is what the courts are looking at when it comes to deeming someone private or public. So, you know, I think and I hope that this is also a lesson that you can't just willy-nilly make accusations. And I'm not, I haven't dug deep into what this particular parent was saying about this coach other than what I've read in the news stories, but...
Well, there's a bigger issue, right? I mean,
there's a bigger issue.
We hear about parents behaving badly all the time. And
right.
The easy thing to do is to sit here on the radio and say, oh, parents, you need to calm down. It's just sports. You know, think of the bigger picture. You can say that. It's also understandable, though, I think, that parents get very, very excitable or passionate about advocating for their kids. And I don't know that you would say that that's necessarily wrong.
No, because as they should. I mean,
right.
Look at some of the fiascos that happened in USA Gymnastics, that were
exactly.
happening at Michigan State,
exactly.
at Penn State. I mean, parents are one of the first lines of defense when it comes
and there
to
are,
their kids.
Look, most the vast, vast, vast majority of coaches out there are great people that are truly interested in helping kids. But like any walk of life, there are bad apples in that bunch. There are bad coaches out there. And, you know, the parents, to a degree, it falls to them to speak up and say, hey, wait a minute, this program's not headed in the right direction because this person's not behaving appropriately. And so here's what we need. You know, so where does that line end up getting drawn, right?
Right.
Because there's a certain amount of advocacy that's necessary and right, and then there's a certain amount that's over the line and beyond the pale. And some of the comments that, you know, this coach is alleging were certainly beyond the pale.
Yeah, and so ultimately this ruling says parents who criticize their kids' public high school coaches do not have legal protections to make false claims. You can certainly bring up issues, and I think there's also a time and place. There's a venue for everything. Sometimes those are directly to school officials, and it's not leaking things or putting them out on social media or different things like that.
Absolutely,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, but I don't think this story is over, but it's a very big day for both mm-hmm. sides of this, parents, coaches, all sides, schools, to really look at behavior and how crazy it can get.
Right. My younger brother actually is a high school basketball coach of a girls team in a local metro high school. And one of his things that he's from the day one that he took this job is that when he's going to have a conversation with parents or with a player, he insists that all entities are there at the same time. So if you're going to have an off-court discussion with a player about playing time or whatever it is, he wants mom and dad there too in that same meeting. And if mom and dad want to have a meeting, that's fine, but the player has to be there too. because what he's seen so many times is that he'll communicate one thing to either a parent or to a player. That player then, you know, you play in the telephone game, right? That player then says something that maybe isn't exactly what he said to their parents, or the parents say something that isn't exactly what he said to the player. And so it's a communication thing that he's trying to get out in front of a lot of this stuff, so that that kind of telephone tag game doesn't happen and stuff gets misconstrued and misunderstood. But even that is only, you know, is only effective to a point. And then people are going to do what people are going to do.
People are going to do what they're going to do. But communication is so vital, so important. When we come back, we'll talk about more parents, more lawsuits, and something that happened with Google and a big fine. But first, it is the Lindis Construction Time Check. It is just about 12:21. Time to learn why Lindis was named to GAF Asphalt Shingles 3-Star President's Club. Rashini Rajkumar back with you. I'm with you today, folks, until 3 o'clock. We've got some fun guests coming up at 12:35. I don't know that I should say the topic is fun. She's a lot of fun. She's Professor Jill Hasday from the University of Minnesota Law School. Her new book, Intimate Lies and the Law. She says no subject is immune from deception in dating, sex, marriage, and family life. There are deception and issues of lying, maybe physical abuse, financial lies, all of this stuff. And what does the law do? Well, she makes a case that currently the law protects the perps, not the victims. So we're going to get into that. We're going to find out a little bit more about how to protect yourself. At 1:35, have you thought about volunteering? Well, Minneapolis-St. Paul just named the biggest AmeriCity, number one AmeriCity, most number of AmeriCorps volunteers in the country, right here in Minneapolis-St. Paul. We'll have one of those from Reading Corps in studio with us at 1:35 to find out about the art and the gift and even making a little money from volunteering. You might not even know about that. Well, you can do that with AmeriCorps. And then our friend Dara will be in studio at 2:35 on this National Cheese Pizza Day to talk about a lot of interesting food and restaurant topics. I've got many questions for her. We were talking earlier in the show about this Minnesota High Court ruling that allows coaches and schools to sue parents that are making false claims against high school coaches. A very big decision came down, or is it, against Google? Google fined $170 million for violating children's privacy. You've probably seen some of these headlines connected to YouTube. $170 million. That sounds like a lot of money to me. I was talking about this with my husband last night, and he said, you know, Rashini, $170 million to Google is like a quarter, 25 cents for you and me. Dan, that puts a lot of things in perspective. So it's really not a lot of money.
And we hear that all the time, like, you know, with sports fines and stuff like that, when a player gets fined $10,000 or whatever it is, well, that's walking around money for that player. It is, but, you know, there's legal precedents and there's protocols. There's reasons that number wasn't just plucked out of the cloud.
Right.
Forgive the pun. I mean, there was a reason that they landed on that number.
You're good, Dan.
Well, I try. There's a reason they landed on that. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, it is. It's walking around money for Google. That's not going to hurt Google at all. But it's not like the government can just show up and say, we're going to fine you $11 billion,
yeah,
whatever it is.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't do
There's
it.
There's
got to
be
way.
Something yeah. and some sort of layout and process for this. So, you know, it was approved in this settlement, and I'm now reading from the New York Times Online. YouTube also agreed to create a system that asks video channel owners to identify the children's content they post so that targeted ads are not placed. And YouTube must obtain consent from parents before collecting or sharing personal details like a child's name or photos. That, to me, is the biggest victory of this settlement.
Absolutely.
Is that kind of rule and reg on YouTube. I mean, think about it. We just pulled up a song from YouTube last night because I was trying to remember lyrics from a song. YouTube is just part of our lives right now, and most of us are not out there trying to collect and maliciously disseminate children's private information. But the very fact that the FTC said, okay, now you got to do this, to me, that's the big win.
It is, so long as it's enforced. You know, I mean, it's
that's
one thing.
True.
It's one thing for them to claim that, okay, this is what has to happen now. It's another thing for YouTube to actually go along with it. Because like we said, when you're talking about $170 million to Google, that to them. So where is that enough of an incentive for them to actually comply with this ruling? You know, we'll wait and see. The bigger problem in my mind is that what you touched on, is that YouTube, things like YouTube and Facebook and Google, they're so ubiquitous now that even if you want to get away from them, it's, I wouldn't say it's impossible, but it can be very, very difficult. I dump my Facebook page in a heartbeat, except that I have to have it for work purposes.
Right.
So, you know, how do you balance that, right? I mean, how do you protect yourself against these companies and their misuse of your data, which is clearly going on, when in order to function in everyday society, often you have to have access?
Well, I mean, but there are some simple answers to that question, Dan Cook. And one answer is don't give every piece of detail they ask for. You may have to give certain required pieces of information, but your social security number, like even in medical offices, you do not need to share your social security in your dental or medical office. So you can also be very stingy about what you sign away and what you share. It's very true. We are asking all show, what is your big bucket list item or items? Send us a tweet, message us on Facebook. Dan has it up there on our social, or give us a call. Well, we'll get into all things law when it comes to deception and lies with intimates, whether that's a family member, a husband, a spouse, people that you trust. We're going to get into that with Professor Jill Hasday when we return.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Rashini Rajkumar back with you. Pretty serious topic, but listen up, because you might need the help of my next guest, at least her wisdom, her research, and you might want to know what's happening in the law to protect you if you find yourself on the wrong side of what we're going to talk about. She is Professor Jill Hasday, Professor of Law at the University of Minnesota. Her new book, Intimate Lies and the Law. Welcome back to WCCO Radio, Professor.
Thanks for having me.
All right, you get into some really deep topics. Chapter one, why do people deceive their intimates? I mean, you get right into it. So let me ask you, why do people deceive their intimates, their loved ones?
Well, there can be endless reasons, but one of the bottom lines of the book is people can just capture tremendous advantages by deceiving their intimates, and many people can't resist the temptation.
And what are some of these? I'm thinking of financial, but what are some of these advantages?
Endless. So I have different categories of deception. One I call linchpin deception, and that just means a lot of times people deceive because they think they won't be able to have the relationship unless they're deceiving you. So if you know I'm married, you won't want to be my new girlfriend. Or if you know I have a criminal record. Sometimes people deceive because that's their route into government benefits that wouldn't be available. So I'm deceiving you because I want to become a citizen of the United States. So I'm, you know, making you think that we love each other when really I'm using you.
Yeah. And, you know, it is because people are now vulnerable, whether maybe love is involved or some kind of dependent relationship is involved. So how can we, before we get into kind of what the law is saying about this, how can someone prevent becoming a victim of that kind of relationship?
Well, people, I think in retrospect, courts and commentators like to blame people for being fooled. You should have investigated, you should have discovered, and it's your fault. One of the points I want to make in the book is it's much harder than we'd like to think to detect deception. First, we're very bad at spotting, of telling when someone's lying to us, especially when it's someone we trust. Social norms tell us not to investigate, you know, not to hire a private detective when we start dating someone. And if we try to investigate, they very well may find out. You know, they'll spot us going through their garbage or searching their email. So it's hard to investigate. One of the things I did as I was writing the book is I read a lot of manuals written by and for private detectives. So the book has some tips about how to go through the public records and to try to find things. It's not always perfect, and it's not necessarily the case that there'll be a public record that will reveal the deception.
Yeah, so speaking of public records, and remember back well before, about the time I was starting to date my now husband, some of my law school friends said, you know, do you want, they were practicing attorneys, and they said, do you want us to dig up any of his paperwork? And I said no.
Oh, now, and actually, not only, just to be, another point I want to make is that it is against the law to look for a lot of things you would like. So some people who have said, I'd like to look through his emails or his tax returns or his credit reports. People who have done that have ended up in jail themselves or subject to damage suits. You want to be very careful about investigating.
And all you're doing is trying to protect yourself.
Right. I mean, one of the ironies is that courts tend to blame people for being fooled, but the law itself often makes it more difficult to investigate, and often for good reasons. You know, we don't want our credit reports, our tax returns to be out there for anyone to see, but you have to be careful in investigating. You want to make sure you're not yourself violating the law.
I mean, it's a great title, Intimate Lies and the Law, the new book by Professor Jill Hasday from the University of Minnesota Law School. And you say that no subject is immune from deception. It starts with dating, can happen in sex, marriage, and family life. I mean, this covers pretty much any personal relationship you have. How do we not let everyone listening right now become just overly paranoid?
Okay, so right. People can do anything that matters to someone can be the subject of a deception. If it matters to them or to you, they could deceive about. I think it is, it's tricky. One of the people I talk about in the book, he discovers that his wife had been having this affair for years and it ends the marriage, but also he feels like it really destroys his ability to trust. And he says, I'm in this terrible position where at one hand, I have kind of a more realistic sense that deception is possible. But on the other, you know, you want to have another relationship again. So I don't want people to read this book and think, okay, I'm done with love or family ties, you know. I just want to say that this is something that can happen. And I think the law should do more to help people who it happens to, because we want people to trust each other. It would be a terrible society if someone says you love, if someone says they love you, and your first thought is, okay, I better investigate because they're probably deceiving me.
I also find it interesting that you say the law has placed too much emphasis on protecting the intimate deceivers, too little importance on helping the people they deceive.
Generally, courts, we're in an era where generally people celebrate marriage and intimacy, but in this era, in this area, you just don't see it. Courts say deception is common, and they assume that they should keep it in place. So one man reports that his ex-girlfriend fakes being pregnant. His new wife is so distraught, she actually kills herself. The fake pregnancy goes on for 6 months. He eventually discovers it. He sues. The court says, this is ordinary. We can't intervene. So it really is interesting that not in every case, but routinely, they side with the deceiver, and then they give them no incentive to change their ways.
Right. And, you know, it's hard in that example that you share. It's the only person I have sympathy for is that woman who killed herself. Really? I mean, because the guy was having an affair.
No, he wasn't. It was a previous girlfriend.
Girlfriend.
It was a previous girlfriend.
Even before he got married.
A whirlwind romance gets married. So
yeah.
We don't know because the court won't even hear the case.
And look into it.
Right. Yeah. On his account of the facts, he really did not do anything.
Right. So there are a lot of losers in this kind of scenario.
Oh, I mean, intimate deception can inflict enormous damage. I think the emotional damage is obvious, but often financial, physical damage as well. So, for instance, one thing I learned in writing this book is, you know, affairs are expensive. So if someone is deceiving you for an affair, they're also probably deceiving you to siphon off all the money to pay for that affair, the weekends away and the hotels. And courts in general are not too interested in giving a remedy for deception in an ongoing marriage. So, for instance, one of the cases I talk about in the book, man lies to his wife, says he's been arrested for attempted rape, but he says, I'm innocent. She uses her money to help in his defense. Turns out he's convicted, and he later confesses he was guilty. When they divorce, she says, I should be compensated for the thousands of dollars I spent on his defense. I wouldn't have if he hadn't lied to me. Court says, no. It was an ongoing marriage. You don't get compensated for being deceived. So that woman has suffered both emotionally but also financially, and anyone in that position, you have an incentive to lie because that's a way to get resources that you wouldn't be able to get if you told the truth.
I'm talking with Professor Jill Hasday. If you have any questions for her, give us a ring, 651-989-9226 or 866-989-9226. Were you a victim in one of these situations? You don't even have to use your name. We'd love to hear your story. The other thing, when you share a story like that, I want to point out, not all victims are necessarily women. There are male victims in this intimate lies in the law.
Yes, yes. So I think one stereotype people have is that intimate deception is something that men inflict on women. And in the cases, you do see more women suing men, but there's no evidence to suggest that there's any systematic imbalance. And in fact, I feel like I'm most comfortable saying that every group deceives, you know, is a robust practitioner of deception. Often what people deceive about, though, is shaped by their position in society. So it seems like men are more likely to deceive about their income because that's more important to men in the dating market. Whereas other, like fake pregnancy, that's a classic female deception. So, but I don't want to say it's not only men who deceive or only women or only young people or only old people, everyone, every group.
My advice is, and I mean, I'm a professional interviewer, so I have no trouble asking questions, but my advice is to ask question. I mean, if you know, oftentimes if it smells like it's a rat, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if your spidey senses are going, follow them and get some answers.
I mean, sometimes, right. So I think, yes, one of the, there's actually a self-help book I talk about in my book that says, you know, think of yourself as a reporter. We're kind of trained, I think, socially to see a certain level of questioning as like rude or nosy. And I understand where that norm comes from. We want to promote connections, but it can have a cost. And certainly asking as many questions as you can could be a good idea. Some of the women who've been deceived, one woman, she had dated two men who were pretending to be unmarried, they actually were married. She says her new policy is that unless she meets their friends, family, and, you know, colleagues within the first 2 weeks, she's just not interested in having a relationship. There's nothing wrong with that strategy. I'll just say, though, that's not a strategy you can pursue in secret. You're obviously telling the person. Some people may feel like you're not trusting me. You know, they're not ready to introduce you to their mother on date two. But, I mean, there's things you can do to protect yourself, like meeting everyone else in their family, asking them questions. There's also certain things that people like to deceive about. So deceivers like to pretend to work for the CIA. If you're a real spy, you're not telling your first date that you're a spy. I'm just giving you a tip.
Oh, my God. Gosh.
That... It's a great deception because it's glamorous, yeah. But also they're setting up an excuse for being away a lot.
Yeah.
You
like,
know, I'm a spy.
Who falls for that, though, Professor? Apparently people do.
I think it's a comforting thought to think that it's only the stupid and vulnerable.
Right.
You know, it's because it makes
But we can. We all fall. I mean, when...
Anyone can fall for it. I mean, maybe not that one, but something else. Or, similarly, I think there are more men right now pretending to have been Navy SEALs than ever served in the Navy SEALs. I mean,
it's kind of a badass thing to admit.
But on the other hand, of course, there are some people who have been in the Navy SEALs, right? And
right.
It would be terrible if an actual person is telling you about their Navy
SEAL
experience.
But we can look up if you were a Navy SEAL.
Yeah, so now that's an example. It's not perfect, but because there's so much fraud about being in the Navy SEALs, some men who served in the Navy SEALs have created online lists, which aren't perfect, but they're a good start. It's often, though, I think sometimes people think everything is available now with the Internet. One thing I discovered in this book is not every public record is perfectly available, even something like criminal convictions. There's so many different jurisdictions. If you're just an ordinary person, not the FBI, it's not so easy to do a perfect criminal record check.
True. And I think, though, common sense, you know, if this other person you've been dating doesn't want you to meet friends, doesn't want you to meet a family member, if they have kids themselves and you've been together long enough and you don't ever get to meet the kids eventually. I mean, I think there are some low-hanging fruit,
yes,
spidey,
I mean,
sense things that we,
yes,
should all
and
be.
I would, yeah, of course. I mean, if you read the book, I think many people who've read the book have said to me afterwards they no longer intend to honor the social norm of not investigating because that seems like the wrong idea after you've read the book. But the other thing is it's one of the messages I'm trying to make in the book is I think we have a tendency to blame the people who were fooled. You should have protected yourself, but it's not realistic. People are fooled all the time, and it's the fault of the person who was fooling.
Yeah. Them. And I certainly don't want to make it sound like I'm blaming those victims in any way.
But yes, protect yourself. If you have a sense that something is off, protect yourself, especially early, because another thing that happens is sometimes eventually, you know, the stories stop adding up, or one woman in the book, you know, he's telling her stories about his past and then he's telling people different versions. But by the time she starts to get suspicious, they already have a child together, their life is intertwined. It's hard, you know, the time to really investigate, if you can, is at the beginning.
Can I just say this right now for anyone who does online dating? If in that first meeting you recognize that that person's picture is not the same by any sense of the imagination, amount of hair, amount of pounds, as the person who shows up on that date, right there, you've got content by which you can ask some serious questions, because that's deception right there.
Right,
and
right,
a simple,
right.
trivial, it might seem trivial, Professor, but right there, you can see that, right?
Yes. I mean, I think the internet is interesting because the internet facilitates a lot of deception, because if everyone's living in a small town and knows each other, there's certain deceits you just can't get away with. But now you're meeting all these strangers where they can present themselves in ways, and you don't have the background. At the same time, the internet can be a way of investigating. You know, I talk about it in the book, but there are services where you can look up if their phone number matches the address where they live and things like that.
I mean, good advice. And I'll give a little public service announcement. Tweet me at Rashini R on Twitter if you want some well-crafted questions. I will send them to you. That's how much I care about you not getting deceived. Is there a bright spot, though, Professor, before we say goodbye? I mean, are there enough people like you trying to shed some light on this that maybe the courts are going to look at things a little differently?
I hope there will be. This is really the first book that systematically looks at how the law treats the subject. And what I hope happens is that something that people take for granted, that there's all this deception intimacy, will become something that people think about and say, why do we take for granted? Isn't there something we might be able to do about it?
All right. Well, very good stuff. You can find her book, Intimate Lies in the Law, wherever you find books, and at JillHasday.com. Thanks so much, Professor. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right, we'll continue to take your calls when we come back. But first, the Lindis Construction Time Check is $150. Time to call us for a free estimate on Season Guard or Infinity by Marvin Windows. Rashini Rajkumar back with you. Folks, it is a big weekend coming up for me. I am going on my annual U.S. Open / business trip to New York. I leave in the morning. But it's a first this year in that I will be able to see not a first week show, not a game, not a quarterfinal, not a semi, a final. I'm not only seeing the women's final on Saturday, but I get to see the men's final on Sunday. This is a first, and I have been blessed, thanks to my brother and his ticket privileges, to go to the U.S. Open the last several years. That, I hope, is on your bucket list, folks, because it is an amazing experience, whether you like tennis or not. It is amazing. You got to do it. Every person needs to do it at least once. And now, Dan Cook, I get to see the finals both Saturday and Sunday, each day with one of my best friends from college.
Yeah, you know, I was watching the other night when Federer got knocked out. And even, I mean, that was kind of a bummer that, you know, one of the best players in the world was out. But just watching the atmosphere and watching how into the match people were out there, it looks like just such a cool atmosphere.
It's a real
And that was
cool.
a quarterfinal. I can't imagine what the final is.
Oh, my gosh. And last night we were watching some on TV, and Nadal played Schwartzman, and the crowd was just on this. Mm-hmm. He's a smaller guy from Argentina. They're on his side. He ultimately lost. But the crowd, and you feel it, and the players feel it, and you're in the audience. You're part of something. It's amazing. So that's our question today. You can go to the Chad Hartman Show page on Facebook, respond to our question we put out there, what's on your bucket list, or you can tweet us, or you can call us, 651-989-9226. We'll talk about that throughout the show today. I also have to say there's one big thing that's kind of a lifetime bucket list item for me, Dan, and that is running the Boston Marathon one day. And it's not an easy feat because you have to qualify for
right.
it.
Right.
And
it's not like you just sign up and go, like the Twin Cities Marathon.
No. And right. And you have to have a qualifying time. And I jokingly say I might be 65 by the time that happens, because every year, every bracket, age bracket, you get older, the time gets a little slower.
Sure.
But it's still brisk. It's still brisk. So I just kicked off this week marathon training for marathon number 5, which will be in December. I am very far from attempting the Boston qualifier, which some
well,
of us call it
Think of it
BQ.
This way. No matter how far you are away, I'm that much further. Because I don't think I've ever even attempted 1/5 of a marathon, much less 5 marathons. So.
Well, I hope you can run with me in spirit.
Sure.
There'll be a lot of miles between this one and
sit down somewhere,
December, and I'm probably at least 3 marathons away from even trying for a BQ.
Yeah.
So, but one day, that's on my bucket list. So I want to hear from you folks. Call us. tweet us, Facebook message us. We have lots more show coming up. And when we come back after the news, we're going to talk about the sports betting concept. I'm fascinated by this. Are you? Have you placed a sports bet? Do you want to? Are you in one of the 11 states or do you go there just so you can do this? And where do we sit in Minnesota? We'll get into all of that. Hear from you. Phone lines are open, 866-989-9226, when we return.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.